again by Benning. Darnell Nurse left it in the corner, gets up center. Perry scores! Corey Perry!
Well, you're able to shake away from Solani. It's given away to Solani around in front. Score! Teemu Selanne with the steal.
Three on the face, one. Score! Off the floor! On the board! Paul Kariya!
I think part of that got caught, but welcome to the show, everybody. We the Anaheim Ducks season. I would like to start off by saying me and Jason were completely correct on our predictions for last week, and your offer did not happen.
I know, I missed by one. I'm not going to lie to you. I've never been so happy to be wrong.
Well, yeah.
Like, that's the thing for me, right? It was the best case scenario. Either they sucked and I got to be pompous about it, or they were great and I was wrong because the team is good. So, you know.
It's a win-win.
I really might never pick anything other than Ofer again.
You were wrong, but the team still wasn't good.
There is that.
We won against Calgary, which in the grand scheme of things was the game we probably should have won when you look at the rest of the opponents that we were playing. So, but you know, I'll take it. It felt like the most realistic outcome, so I'll take the early W. I don't know about this week. There's some interesting matchups that we'll get to at some point. But I mean, it's to be expected at this point, in the sense that, you know, the Ducks are gonna have a lot of weeks like this where, you know, they get one win out of three. All the games except the game against Winnipeg were close. You know, the game against Edmonton we're leading 4-3 and kind of choked it and ended up losing 6-5. Almost made the comeback, but it was kind of too little too late in that game. Had a tight game against Minnesota that ended up getting just a point out of and losing in overtime. So there are games that they made close, and the game against Edmonton was exciting, and even the game against Minnesota was exciting as well. The Jets game, I don't think the Ducks deserved to lose 5-1. I think it was a better performance than some of the other games that week. But the empty net goal and some of the Kyle Connor goal after the empty net goal kind of padded the score a little bit. But there were positives to draw from that stretch, even though they only won 1 out of 4.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely thought that they played better this week than last week, which obviously is something you want to see, even if it's something you also want to expect. But yeah, I think it's, you know, having the four games so close together, it gives you a chance to just kind of see how they treat different teams. And I think those four teams, especially with two of them being repeats, provided a pretty interesting opportunity to see kind of where this team was at.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I can't complain. You know, there were some good individual performances too. I think obviously, you know, the big one that sticks out is Troy Terry getting his first 6 points of the season across this four-game stretch, getting 2 goals and 4 assists, a point in each game, right? I think he would had two assists, and then a goal and a goal, I believe.
Or
at least, yeah, so something like that across. But his first 6 points across the season came in this four-game stretch. It's nice to see him get going, because we talked about in the first episode where we covered the first two games that, you know, the Silfverberg-Lindstrom line isn't going to be able to carry the Ducks forever, and they're going to need their top performers to step up. And Silfverberg-Lindstrom still looked good this week, and then Troy Terry steps in, and, you know, the line doesn't really take off. Getzlaf gets his first 3 points, but Troy Terry individually on the power play and at 5-on-5 just really launched off, and you hope this is the start of some consistency throughout the rest of the year, because we've seen this from him, maybe not this early in the year, but we've seen this from him before, and you know, the big thing now is continually being able to do this for longer than just a four-game stretch. So these four games upcoming here, I think, are going to be extremely important to see if he's taken that next step forward. And you know, he's got some good opponents to get it done against. You know, you got Buffalo upcoming, you've got Montreal this week as well, who haven't won a game at all this season. So there are some opportunities for him to continue to pad the scoreline and continue to lead the Ducks in scoring.
Yeah, no. So one, you were 100% right. It was 2-2 and then back-to-back games with one goal. But yeah, I mean, I think at this point in the year, other than the power play, Troy Terry's play has to be, you know, the biggest story right now, or the biggest point of excitement. Like, I just think he's looked really good. You know, like, I think we've talked about it on here. Like, I've kind of always felt that he was going to ultimately be somewhere on the spectrum between Silverberg and Raquel, which is he was always going to be, like, good enough at both ends of the ice. And the question was going to be, was he going to end up being more of a defensive forward, or was he going to be more of a playmaker? And it just felt he was going to be somewhere in the middle. And, like, the thing for me is like, I feel like that's still true, but it's moved up a tier. Like, he has looked like a guy that you could at least honestly maybe expect to drive a line of his own. What the production out of that line would be is, you know, a question. But as far as being able to be a force at both ends and create plays, like, he looked really good. Like, he had a hell of a shift the other night. Like, you know, he made a great play to come down and assist the defenseman, went to take it up. He got the puck jacked. Then he turned around right away, took it back, and then was able to make the pass out. And, like, it was just a bunch of up and downs. But, like, the totality of the play, I think, showed what he has to offer going forward. And he's someone I think that Anaheim needs to be really excited about. Fans should be really excited about seeing the kind of player that it looks like he might be able to be. You know, and like you said, it'll be about consistency and the ability to do it night after night. And the other thing that's important is to remember that, especially in a sport like hockey, like, production isn't always the best way to tell how well someone is playing. So, you know, it'll be things like takeaways and good defense, or, you know, creating scoring chances, even if people aren't finishing, that, you know, is what you're going to want to see from him over an extended period of time. And he looks more than capable of doing that. And he's certainly going to have the opportunity to do that.
Yeah. And kind of as Dan DB Lowry in the chat put here, like, this just in, Troy Terry's good at hockey. Like, he's been, at least the underlying numbers over the last few years have been good for him. And maybe the one thing missing out,
encouraging.
Yeah. The missing piece was consistent production. And, you know, we're still not there yet, because it's a nice four game stretch here where he has 6 points in four games. Not, you know, he's not going to keep that up for the rest of the year, but if he can finish around, you know, 40 or 50 point pace, I think that is the progression that we're hoping for from Troy Terry at this point. And what, you know, in the past I would have thought of as his ultimate ceiling, but who knows, right? He has plenty of time left. He's still young enough, and I think the one thing we've seen from him year on year is at least some progression. You know, maybe not the progression we've hoped for, but there's still been some improvement each year in different areas of the game. And, you know, he's definitely become one of the best defensive forwards for the Ducks. And now it's about, you know, adding that offensive side to his game, which hopefully we're seeing at this point, and hopefully he can consistently do for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing, just, you know, aside from consistency, is seeing the confidence he's playing with. You know, I think he's been one of the younger guys that you could see the effect of his confidence on his game. You know, he just didn't see, you know, he's not as aggressive, and he's not at both ends of the ice. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to bang on about one play, but it just comes to mind so well. But, like, that on that one, that shift that I was talking about, like, he fucking jacked that dude's stick up. Like, that was not a half-hearted thing. Like, he made sure that stick was leaving the ice. Like, you know, and it's an effort play, but it's, I think it's indicative. And so, you know, to see him do this is very, very encouraging. And like you said, there's a decent shot that 50 points is a step in the right direction and not the destination that maybe we felt it was. You know, I mean, and this is why, you know, for to some good and to some bad, this is why I've always kind of felt like it was important to be patient and wait till the players kind of hit 150, 200 games as far as just career numbers, just because there is something to be said for that repetition and that confidence that you gain. And now that they have larger roles, you're seeing the benefits of them kind of having a little bit, I don't want to say more leash, but, like, you're seeing the benefit of giving yourself a little bit of a break from being hard on them for not producing right away. And so I think this is largely encouraging. And Troy Terry looks to be potentially a quality core member for this team moving forward.
Yeah, and they're going to need that. And you know, unfortunately, I was going to bring up Max Jones here as another guy who we would like to see that sort of improvement from. And, it, you know, the bad news comes out that he's out 4 to 6 months with a torn pectoral muscle, which is, just awful news, not only for the player himself, but for the team and, you know, for us as well as, you know, us as fans wanting to see him take that step forward this year and become a bit more of an important player for this team and a top six forward and a guy who can not only contribute with his physicality and, you know, the rough edge to his game, but also contribute offensively. So that's a tough loss, dude. We don't want to see that. I mean, you know, if you want to try and draw positives from it, if you can, it does potentially open up a spot for McTavish to stick around for the entire year. It can provide, you know, maybe the same size and net front presence that Max Jones could. And it's another spot on the left wing where McTavish has been playing that maybe he could slot in there. You never want to see that at the expense of another player. But, you know, in these situations, I don't want to dwell too much on the negatives of Max Jones being out and how much of a bummer it is for him and for everybody involved. And rather, you know, us kind of dwelling on that, you know, discuss some of the positives that could come out to it. Of it, and you know, guys like Sam Steele, who got a shot on left wing this week and had a great breakout game and had two goals, and like I said, Mason McTavish and potentially Benoit Olivier Grew if they move him off center, and Milano, who checked in this week and got one game in. Like, these are the guys who could benefit from that, and we get to potentially see some more of these guys with Jones out for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I mean, that's the lemonade part, right? That's what you're talking about. Like,
yeah.
Max Jones is at a point in his career, he just signed that contract. You know, I think him and the organization are kind of on the same page as what his expectations were going to be going forward this season. We saw the situations that they were putting in him, and we've seen, you know, Dallas Aikens sing his praises early in the season as just far as the kind of energy he brings around that team. Like, I don't think anybody thinks it's a better team without Max Jones, right? And you always would want him to have this time to grow and develop and just to become the impact player so many of us think he can. But the unfortunate reality of professional sports is guys are going to get injured. And it is how you respond to those injuries that ultimately kind of dictates the fortunes of your franchise, right? And because when injuries happen, that's a crack in the process. And so that's when you're forced to adapt. And that's when, like, you kind of show what you're made of. And, like, that's when you actually get paid to do your job. You know, so, yeah, there are some positives to pull out of this that you would have, you know, rather had in a different way, but like you said, you don't really want to dwell on the fact that Max Jones is going to be out for so long, and so what you try to do is find the positives on it. And like you said, an opportunity for Mason McTavish to get more ice time. You know, I had one of my notes from this was like, is it too early to say that they miss Mason McTavish? Because like, from an energy perspective, like he's the only one out there with that kind of Max Jones and maybe Sonny Milano, where that just kind of fucking go. Like, Mason McTavish is just, it feels like one of those things where it's just like, he knows he's not supposed to be there based on everything. And so he's just going to go all, like, it feels very Rudy-ish. Like, he's just, I'm going to go as hard as I can every chance because I'm not going to give them a reason to take this away from me.
Yeah. Or at least it's not going to be a reason of his, like, his doing that,
right,
he didn't
exactly
play well or anything like that.
Exactly.
You know, ultimately,
right,
he might get sent down because he's waiver exempt, but at least he'll know that it wasn't because he wasn't playing well.
Exactly. You can, like, look, when you're that, you know, that young in this kind of league, in this career, even on a bad team like Anaheim, like, the only thing that you can ultimately control is, like, your effort, right? And so, like, if he goes out there every shift and he just shows that kind of effort, he makes it hard for them to take him out, especially for an organization where the head coach is Dallas Aikens. And Dallas Aikens does preach consistency and he does preach effort, you know, as a team. So he's someone, you know, that is going to reward that kind of commitment, I guess. So, you know, but that's exciting. And then, you know, we want to see Sonny Milano get more games. I guess they sent him back down today, and that's a little bit of a bummer because he looked strong. He looked promising in the one game he was out there. So, you know, he was definitely someone I think has a lot to offer, and he's young enough that I think the upside is there. Plus, you know, trade asset and all that kind of crap. But I mean, just for nothing else, like, the team needs goals, and Sonny Milano is the type of player that can provide them. So it's a little frustrating to see them send him down. But
yeah, and it's weird too because, like, I can understand if he came in and didn't look good or the effort wasn't there. Like, I know he didn't put up a point. I don't think he did, at least. But he looked good. Like, like you said, like the one thing that McTavish has done every game he's been in there is he's worked extremely hard, and he just has put in a shift every time he's out there. And I felt like Milano did that in the game against Winnipeg, I believe, is the game that he got in. Like, I felt like he played well. And maybe he's a victim of the fact that the Ducks lost that one at an ugly final score, 5-1. And he's the easiest one to just say, okay, we're sending you back down. And, you know, Maxime Comtois was scratched for that game, I believe, as well. So you're not going to do that forever. So, like, I get it at the end of the day. But you got to reward a kid that's trying to break into the lineup for an effort like that. And if it means Grant comes out or Delorier comes out for Milano to skate on the fourth line, maybe that's not the best place for him, but you've got to show that there's some trust there in the kid, and there's a reward at the end of the tunnel here for coming out and just putting in a good effort and playing well. Otherwise, you know, what's the point of having them around and calling them up and plugging them in for one game? You know, I know it was Comtois going out to send a message to him, but the other side of that coin is Milano's coming in here to try and earn a roster spot. And, you know, we don't know the decision that goes into it, but it almost seems like the organization just really didn't care how he played. It was just, we're going to plug somebody in here because Comtois's coming out. It doesn't matter how they do. Comtois's going back in next game. And the example is made for Maxime Comtois's side. Could be anybody, Milano, whoever. It doesn't seem to matter because I thought he played well, and I thought he deserved another game at expense of maybe one of the fourth liners or even Maxime Comtois if they wanted to keep him out another game. I don't think that's the best option, but I at least think Milano deserved another game after the effort he put in against Winnipeg.
Yeah, it's odd, right? Because you feel like they rewarded Steele for his game, and I feel like the only difference is that Milano didn't score two goals. As far as kind of seeing that first game pop and that energy from them and kind of seeing the dynamic that they're able to provide. So we can get into this in a second as far as like my thing on the fourth line. But like, I think the thing for me is this to me kind of highlights why I don't like Adam Henrique on Zegras's wing. The note that I wrote is Henrique doesn't make Zegras better. He makes him safe. And that's, you know, kind of how I've felt about it ever since they announced it. Like, I think I talked about it last week, but like, it does just kind of bug me. It does feel like an overly safe decision to put a player like Adam Henrique on Zegras' wing when you have Raquel on the other one. Like, you know, one, we saw the kind of chemistry that he was able to have with Comtois at the end of last season. So it's, you know, why aren't they doing that this year? But even then, if you're just trying to say, like, we want to take this year as an opportunity to try to mix and match some guys, like, one of the things that you hope that he's able to do is be a quality of player to make middle six players look like top six players. And so that gives you the benefit to then stretch your talent out over three lines and really be a deep and effective team. And, like, Sonny Milano should be up there. Max Comtois, yeah, obviously Max Jones is kind of my perfect fit just because of what he provides. But like Sonny Milano, Sam Steele, like those players, hell, even, you know, Bo Grew if you want, like I think they certainly deserve an opportunity to play on that line and to try to build some chemistry with someone that they are kind of already building this team around going forward. So to me, it feels like a wasted opportunity and is kind of, I would say, maybe my biggest gripe with Aikens right now is that that is his top line. I understand it as far as, like I said, like helping just kind of raise the floor on what he's able to do. But I think this year, as we've talked about, is going to be about making mistakes and learning and improving and taking those steps forward. And I think having Henrique offers you an opportunity to make the bottom six like really strong. Like if he's your fourth line center between Grant and Delorier, you're in a much better spot than you think, because he's gonna make that line effective. Like those guys are still who they are, but he's gonna make them much more effective. And now you have, like, you know, two veteran centers and two young centers that you can throw out there. So I don't know, it feels like a missed opportunity to me.
Yeah, and I don't even think you necessarily have to get, I don't want to call it drastic, but, you know, I'll say it because I don't have a better word here, but to put Henrique onto the fourth line. Like, I think what we have so far, or at least this is just my opinion through the first few games here, is that we've got three pretty good duos in the sense that we've got Lindstrom, Silverberg, who seem to gel pretty well together. Getzlaff and Terry have seemed over at least the last four game stretch here to be able to develop some chemistry, and Zegras and Comtois dating back to last year and what they were able to do. Not that Terry was a passenger on that line, and as someone mentioned in the chat here, was still waiting to see Comtois, Zegras, Terry after the way they ended the season last year. I think you can comfortably say at least is those three duos I had mentioned are a pretty good option to have. And for me, it could be as easy as swapping Henrique with Comtois. And it becomes Comtois, Zegras, Raquel, and Henrique, Getzlaff, and Terry. And at least give that a shot. Because what's clear to me on those lines is Comtois just it isn't working with Getzlaff and Terry. There's just something there. He just can't seem to get it going. And Henrique, like you had mentioned, just doesn't work with Zegras and Raquel. Raquel's having a great start to the year. Zegras has started a little slow, but I still think he's looked good. Points haven't been there.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Has he started slow?
Yeah. The numbers aren't there, yeah. Like, on paper, he's started slow. I think he's looked really good.
Yeah.
And there have been some plays that just haven't... The finish just hasn't been there, whether it's from him or from the player he's passed the puck to. So, and again, eventually a player like him is going to pick up some greasy points, some secondary assists here or there, and they're going to flow in at some point if he continues to play the way he is. But, yeah, I think at least for the time being, to swap those two guys and play, like, I really like Zegras, Comtois, Raquel on paper and what that could do in the sense that, you know, Zegras is a facilitator on that line. Raquel is, you know, acts as a secondary creator and maybe an outside perimeter shooter. And Maxime Comtois just gets to the right areas. Like, I think there's a good mix there and some potential for them to do really well. And then adding Henrique to that Getzlaff Terry line, it becomes a little bit more of a defensive line. But I think all three of them bring something defensively to the game. And then, you know, Troy Terry adds a bit of that creativity. Obviously, Getzlaff with his passing ability. And I think Adam Henrique just kind of rounds out the rest of that line. And, you know, whether that gets them going or not remains to be seen, but something has to change. Because I don't think Comtois benefits from being healthy scratched. I know they're trying to send a message, but for me, like, instead of healthy scratching him, why not just put him with the player he had the most chemistry with last year, and that's Trevor Zegras, and I don't know why that wouldn't be your first option.
Is it really that big of it?
It's not that big of a deal. It's just you want to try and get him going, right?
5 games into the season. I don't know. This is one of those things that I feel like fans can overreact to, right? Or not even fans, like people outside of the decision-making process, right? Because even the media can overthink this shit. For me, the thing is it's a problem when it's one game out, two games in, one game out, three games in, one game out. Another game out, you know what I mean? When it starts to become a that kind of thing, I think that's when it becomes a problem. But if it's 5 games in and they're you need to, you know, kind of improve, so we're gonna sit you down for a game and we're gonna let you watch and see how it goes, and then we're gonna, you know, go over film, yada yada yada, and we're gonna throw you back in there, yeah man, go for it. Especially, and I don't remember which game they sat him down for, but the first game of a back-to-back would have made perfect sense to me going into that week.
I think they sat him for Winnipeg, so
yeah, that sounds about
that
right.
That was back-to-back, right? Second game or back-to-back?
4 games.
Was it Calgary, then nobody, then Edmonton, Winnipeg, right? Was back-to-back, I think? I'll have to remember that.
No, Calgary, Edmonton.
Okay, okay. Yeah. So they played in the third Winnipeg, game of back-to-back. Then. They benched them for that one.
But I definitely get your point, and I do think there's obviously something to be said for you should maybe look at putting him with Zegras first, given the kind of, chemistry they showed at the end of last season. But if you're going to sit him down, I'd rather you do it game 5 or game 4 than, 35 or 36. I'd rather at that point, it's a little bit more about getting out, because if the conversation's still happening, then that's one thing. But if it's something that you're letting sit for 30 games, that's annoying to me.
And you know, case in point,
it's not something you want
to. Yeah. Case in point on overreacting. We went into this week in the first game of this week against Calgary, Troy Terry had no points. It was 2 games, but he had no points and didn't look great. And we're all sitting, we didn't sit here and overreact and say, oh my God, Troy Terry hasn't gotten going yet. What's going to happen? But there was some discussion that we had about, when's he going to get going? When are these top guys, Comtois, Terry, Zegras, you know, Raquel at that point as well. When are they going to start contributing to offense? Because the first two games were all Lindstrom Silverberg. And then guess what? We go into this week, Ricard Raquel has 3 goals. Troy Terry puts up 6 points in 4 games, right? And then all of a sudden they're fine. And nobody's right. talking about how, you know, the first 2 games they didn't put up any points. Now it's, okay, Comtois has no points in 6 games. What's going on? And we have 4 games this week. We could come out of, you know, a week from today, we could record a show on this, you know, upcoming Sunday, and Maxime Comtois could have, you know, 3 goals and 2 assists in the 4 games this week, and we won't even be talking about it anymore. Like, he's that good of a player, and it could be anybody. Like, you know, it's 6 games. It's a very small sample size to get that upset about. You can say it's concerning, and you could throw things out like we did here that why not put him with Zegras and just help accelerate that process to get him going and lean on things that worked last year. But I'm not ready to say, oh man, Maxime Comtois is a one hit wonder. He's toast. Like we're not anywhere near that point yet. Would I love to see him get going? Sure. But I would have also at the beginning of last week when we recorded this last show, say I would have loved to see Raquel get going. I would have loved to see Getzlaff and Terry get going. Would love to see Lindholm get on the board, and then they all get on the board. They all put up points this week. They all look good this week. And, you know, the same for Zegras. There's a lot of overreaction. You even hear the broadcast getting on him for, you know, back passes. I don't know if it was you who tweeted it out or somebody tweeted out about the broadcast getting on Zegras for drop passes when Getzlaff makes like 3 a night and it's okay. And Zegras makes one.
Oh, dude, he made a drop pass, I tweeted out something positive. I was like, he's the son of the father, man. Like, that's how I know he's the chosen one. He's our next one in line. He's Paul Atreides.
But he's like, got one assist in 6 games and people are going nuts, right?
So here's the thing, right? Mason McTavish has twice as many points as Zegras and Comtois do combined, which is a bullshit stat. But it's really funny. Here's the other thing that's great. 3 guys are tied at the top with 6 points, and 5 guys after them have 4 points. In total, 15 players have registered at least 1 point, and Maxime Comtois is not one of them. The top three are Shattenkirk, Terry, Silverberg. Shattenkirk is someone that you want to be in that conversation-ish. You know, I think we've all kind of settled down on him. Troy Terry is absolutely that you want to see. And like you said, that popped over 4 games. But this is the kind of depth scoring that we've talked about this team needing to find if they want to be consistently dangerous night after night right now, given where their talent is. Like, everybody has to step up. And like, obviously, like, whatever, like, you have to have depth and everybody has to step up to win in this league and yada yada bullshit, depth in the playoffs. I get it. But like, this is a different circumstance because so many of these guys are unproven, that all of them getting a chance to step forward like this, and, you know, more than a few of the kind of like potential middle six guys stepping up, is like, it's actually really encouraging to see this team be effective and have the 2 guys you probably most expected to be at the top this year not have any points or 1 point between them.
Yeah, but you know what, like, for me, and the thing that I kind of bring myself back to reality with, is these are likely still the 2 guys that are going to lead the Ducks in scoring at the end of the season. And everybody goes through slumps, especially teams that were near dead last in scoring last year. There have been some positives, and like we said, there's been some players who've stepped up to the plate through 6 games, but we still have, you know, 76 games to go. There's plenty of time for Zegras and for Comtois to get going, for these guys, you know, to start back up and get back to the level that we hoped of them, you know, for the start of this year. But when you look at it and you draw positives from their play, I think the one place you can look at it, you know, again, the points aren't there and the on-paper stats aren't there. But when you look at the power play in that first unit with Zegras, Getzlaff, Comtois, Drysdale, right? Like, there is a ton of positives about the way that they work that play, that power play. And, you know, there has been success from that unit. I think the second unit's been just as good, if not better at times. But, you know, some of the things I noticed from that last game against Minnesota were just the amount of options that power play has now and different ways to beat a team. It's night and day from last year. And you can see, like, they legitimately put teams on the back foot, which you're supposed to do on the power play. And they do that a lot now. And I think it stems from the fact that, okay, now Drysdale's an option to shoot on the power play from the point. And, you know, you look at Troy Terry's goal against Minnesota, the deflection. I think there's been two goals that the Ducks have had on the power play this year that were deflections off a Drysdale point shot. I believe it was Henrik and Troy Terry in the game against Minnesota. He's become an option now because he's so good at getting pucks through on net and finding players in front of the net for the deflection. So he's now an option. You've got Getzlaff on the left circle as a one-timer. You've got Zegras on the right side as a one-time option. And you've got Comtois down low in front of the net or kind of right in the blue paint, where we saw a lot of passes from Zegras down low to Comtois for that kind of in front of the net option, whether Comtois is going to pull it to his forehand and shoot or go back to the point or go cross crease. They just have assigned roles that they bought into, and each one of them is a threat now. And that's something we didn't have, and we've seen the production from the power play do well. And I think the second unit has its own thing going on as well, where there's some chemistry there and there's roles that guys know what they're doing. But that first unit gives me hope that eventually Comtois and Zegras are going to start picking up the points, whether it's goals or assists or secondary assists, just because of how well that first unit works and how many options that it seems that they have to beat the opposition penalty killers.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, going forward, you know, in 3 years, you kind of hope it's probably Perreault or Pastuyev in that Getzlaf spot. But I think the thing that's hilarious for me is that you can see how much of what's different is the players and, like, the mentality. Like, the way that Zegras and Drysdale play, like, they play with purpose. You know what I mean? Like, it always kind of felt to me like previous power plays were just kind of listless and waiting, and they were, I don't want to say, like, too cute, but, like, they overthought everything, and they hesitated to just get pucks on net. And, like, seeing that, these young guys are like, oh, shit, we're just going to get the puck on net. And then finally, at, you know, age 45, Getzlaf's like, yeah, sure, I'll start shooting. Let me shoot the one-timer. Like, you know, like, the broadcast is like, yeah, Getzlaf actually asked to be the first one-time option. I was like, oh, too bad he's never had the chance to do that. They would never have listened to him before this year. But, you know, it's great to see. It's just, I mean, look, man, we fucking called it. Like, sorry, but I'm going to be fucking happy about us. We called it, man. We said, and obviously this is very basic, but everybody shut up. We're going to be happy and take the credit. It's goaltending, and the power play has kept them in the games that they've been in. Like, their 5-on-5 play has improved over the course of the, you know, 5 or 6 games. But none of it has been to a point that you're like, oh, they're getting, they're, what's carrying them is 5-on-5 play. You're like, no, the goalies are standing on their heads, and the power play is producing in a direction, in a level that we've never seen this power play produce at. And so that's what's allowing this team to be in these games. And that's what's making them close.
Yeah,
so,
and
we're very smart, and people should listen to us.
I think even in the games where the goaltending hasn't been superhuman, I don't want to say bad because they weren't bad, but you look at Stolarz in the game against Edmonton and Gibson in the game against Minnesota. They weren't excellent in those games, but they were okay. You know, they weren't at the same level as, you know, Gibson stopping 41 shots against Calgary, or the, you know, the 33 saves he made against Winnipeg. They weren't at that level. They were still good, but the Ducks compensated that with timely scoring and goals on the power play. And that's something we didn't see last year. The Winnipeg game is a one-off, and I think, you know, that game on a scoreline, when you look at 5-1, looks a lot worse than it really was. You know, I think it was more of probably a 3-1 game. You know, obviously, there's an empty netter in there, and then the final Kyle Connor goal after the empty netter as well was a breakaway. So it is what it is at that point. But I think they've at least been able to hang around these games, and they've made it closer despite, you know, the goaltending is not always going to be perfect, and we've talked about that. And the Ducks are going to have to find a way to win games when their goaltending isn't at that level, and I think they've been able to do that.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Yeah, they can't rely on their goaltenders to be Dominic Hasek level players. Yeah, you know, it's weird that Anthony Stolarz manages to stand on his head. a couple of times, and this team's like, ah, fuck it, let's just make him do it forever. But yeah, no, it's good to see. Like you said, they've had a couple of rough games or some soft ones have gone in or whatever you want to say. But like, by and large, the goaltending has been competent, and that's what they're going to need from those two goaltenders. And the rest of it's going to just be up to, you know, the skaters to just not leave them completely out to dry. Like, I'll be honest, I think Cam Fowler's looked a little bit better this year in front of his net. I think Josh Manson is like the third or fourth best forward on our team right now. You know, structurally, they look a little bit better defensively and stuff like that. But like, you know, it just seems to be, more than anything, it's just the infusion of youth and the change in mindset has led to just a different style of play. Like, I don't think this team could have gone back-to-back or back-and-forth with Edmonton the way they did the other night a couple years ago. Like, they just didn't have the horses. And now they've got some younger guys who are starting to feel themselves, and, you know, you get a little puck luck, and you're in a 6-5 game with Edmonton.
Yeah, and that's a tough team to keep under six goals on any nightly basis, right? Like, it's... you know, and it was an exciting game. Like, I that's the only thing we're kind of asking for this year is excitement in some
fun,
way.
Yeah,
like, you know, the Winnipeg game, that wasn't fun. The way it ended, it wasn't as bad a game. Like, I've said this several times already, it wasn't as bad a game as it looks. But, you know, the Minnesota game, lost in OT. That was a fun game to watch. The Edmonton 6-5 game, they were up 4-3. They kind of blew it. They attempted to come back, came up short, but it was a fun game to watch. Like, it was just exciting to watch them kind of stick around in these games against, you know, Edmonton were undefeated, Minnesota undefeated. Like, these are undefeated teams. These are two of the top teams right now to start the season, and the Ducks were hanging around there against these teams. And, you know, that's all you can ask for in a season where they're going to lose a lot of games, and it's going to be another tough year, and there's going to be some, you know, tough stretches here and there. But you want to see that progression. You want to see guys take a step forward. You want to see the team, you know, have a bit more fight and a bit more compete and really battle in these games against top teams.
Yeah. And go full Brian Burke.
Why not? And, you know, like, we've seen it. And again, it's a small sample size, but that's all you can hope for, and why I come out of this, and, you know, we're so optimistic and positive about this week, even despite the Ducks losing 3 of 4 games, is because, you know, 3 out of 4 of them were exciting. And even the game against Winnipeg wasn't that bad. So it gives you hope for the next coming games and for the rest of the year. And once some of these other, you know, another further year of production and development from the kids that are already with the team, and Perreault in San Diego and Pastuyev with Guelph and Zellweger in the WHL, and you know, more progression from the guys they have in college, and seeing them eventually get to the lineup and get added in, again, you're kind of seeing the light at the end of the tunnel when everything is hopefully back in place and the Ducks are competitive again.
I mean, look, that's the benefit, right, of scoring a handful of power play goals early, is now it's already kind of planted in your head that it's something that might happen. And just that little bit of hope, you know, that the power play is at least a thing that other teams should be concerned about. Like, I don't think any of us expected to go, you know, 3 goals a game, like, you know, every third or fourth game. Like, that's ridiculous, obviously. But there is enough talent there and enough purposeful, you know, playing right now with that unit that there's enough to be excited about right now. Now, when we get into January and the power play's not doing well, and Gibson and Stolarz are run down from having to make 50 saves
a
game.
I don't want to take this slander right now.
No. But that's what I'm saying, right? I'm not even trying to slander. It's just like, that's going to be, you know, that's going to be tough whenever we get there. But right now, early in the season, what you're seeing out of this team is a version of it that can compete in most games.
Yeah, and that's what you can hope for, and that's the most you can hope for right now. It's just competition and exciting games and sticking around. And you know, the difference between teams who do that and the elite teams is the elite teams can finish off another team, close out a game, get the win, you know, find different ways to win games. And, you know, that's the next step of development for the Ducks, is to get from a team that can just compete and keep it close to a team that can take it that next step further and, you know, get the winning goal, or, you know, make the winning play and really just kind of push into that next level. And they'll get there. And I think we're all confident eventually they will. The pieces are coming together, and, you know, hopefully another big piece in the draft this year. But you want to see those progressive signs that they're getting back to that place. And we haven't seen that for a while. So I think, you know, again, only 6 games, but we'll see what we're, you know, what we're saying 25-30 games from now, and hopefully it's the same thing. But optimistic signs, to say the least, at least in the beginning. All right, to wrap up the kind of weekend review here, we'll pick our best and worst performers of the week. I think we'll probably both have the same guy for best performance. So we'll start with our worst performer of the week. Do you have one, or do you want me to go first?
You go first. Give me a second.
All right. I'll probably get some hate for this one. I don't want to say the guy I'm going to say, but I hate picking on the fourth line because it's too easy. Like, to say, every week in and week out, I could say DeLoria and Grant are the worst players, and I'm probably not wrong, but it's so obvious to pick them every week. And I think for Maxime Comtois, it's not like Zegras, where there's been progression, and you've seen, you know, he's playing well, and just the points aren't there. For Maxime Comtois, I think there's still something missing where he hasn't been playing that great, and the points aren't there. And for me, this week, adding in the healthy scratch, I think he was the most disappointing player on the team. I think everybody else kind of took it a step up from where they were, or in the way they were playing in the first couple weeks. And Maxime Comtois just hasn't done that for me. So, reluctantly, he's my my most disappointing player of the week.
My most disappointing player of the week is Max Jones, because he's hurt and I'm going to miss my big, beautiful boy. I'm going to say something embarrassing real quick. I had literally no idea until like a week ago that he was American. I just assumed he was Canadian.
Really?
I feel like an idiot. Yeah, I just assumed he was Canadian because he plays hockey and he played in the OHL. So I was like, yeah, he's got to be Canadian. Whatever.
I
love that much more. That explains why he's like actually cares.
Your two favorite players, or at least to my knowledge. Both played for the Knights, and both are American, and Matthew Tkachuk and Max Jones.
They're beautiful boys. But no, I honestly, for me, I have to say Bo Gruel, man. He had a bad week. Like, I don't think any of it is unexpected, you know, given how quickly he jumped up, given how little experience he has, like, at an NHL level. You know what I mean? Like, the games that he's played this year, the only games he's ever played, like, I'm not holding it against him, but like, I thought when he was up in that first game, he looked a little bit stronger than he kind of has been as the week has gone on. And like, again, that's to be expected. He's never done this before, but it was something that I noticed. And after having a strong first game, it was something that I picked up on.
Yep. No, I can see that. And he had a strong first two games, or at least a strong second game for sure. Where he looked a little bit more comfortable, and I feel like that faded slightly, and it's tough. Like, the line mates he's playing with are DeLoria and Grant, so it's really hard to stand out and look great, because I don't think he's a player that can do things on his own and drive play on his own. So he's not going to get a lot of support in that from DeLoria and Grant, so it is hard for him to stand out. But I feel like his play on the penalty kill wasn't as, you know, exciting. And he wasn't as driven, it seemed like, in the four games. And it's tough to keep that up consistently. But I saw him fade away a little bit from those first two games, which I could kind of understand why you went that route.
Yeah, I mean, look, in his first six games, he's going out there and he's playing against Connor McDavid. He's playing against, you know, Nikolai Ehlers.
Kyle Connor.
Pierre-Luc Dubois. Kyle Connor. Kirill Kaprizov. Like, he's not going up against schmucks. Like, he's kind of getting thrown into the fire. And like I said at the beginning, like, I'm fine with it because he's got to learn. And I kind of just think baptism by fire for a checking center makes a lot of sense to me, because you're not trying to get his offensive confidence up. What you're trying to do is give him the reps at the defensive or at the pro level for him to learn all the little things he needs to learn about timing and skill sets and what to look for right at the next level. Because every time you go up, the guys get better, and you, as a defensive player, you need to adjust quickly. And so I just don't think that him getting torched every night is necessarily the worst thing, as long as they're handling it right away from the puck or away from the ice, as long as they're talking to him and communicating him with. Being with Grant and being with DeLaurier isn't necessarily the most beneficial situation to walk in for, but the kid's going to get his reps this way, and they play Grant more than they should, so what are you going to do? But I don't want to question his effort because I don't feel like that's fair. But I will say he did look tired. Like, it just, it takes something out of you.
And yeah, again, and three like, games in four nights and it's four and seven. It's a whole
other fucking level.
It was a tough week.
I mean, literally, it's the first six games he's ever played in the NHL. He played in that stretch and against those players. Like, yeah, dude, you're going to get put on your ass. It just happened.
Yeah.
And he's playing 12 minutes a night. Like, that's not bad at all.
And he could be a guy, you know, that could benefit from a healthy scratch in the sense that just get some rest. Take a night off. You know, relax a little bit. We'll throw you back in. We got a back-to-back coming up this week where I think they could do that, and that would be a nice time for him to get a rest. Whether he plays the first two and then gets the second game of the back-to-back off or plays the first game of the week and gets the first game of the back-to-back off, that could be a good time to just sit him down and say, hey, like, this isn't because you're playing bad. This has nothing to do with that. Like, just take a break. Like, this is your first six games, seven, eight games of your NHL career at that point. We're not trying to burn you out here and run you into the ground. We're going to take our time here and give you a break. And I think that could be the best course of action for him in this upcoming week. And we'll see. I mean, you know, the Ducks have a few less players now to replace him with because Milano back down to San Diego and Volkov on waivers for a mutual termination of his contract. Mm-hmm. So two guys in preseason that we talked about and said, we'd like to see what they can do for the Ducks this year. They ended up both getting sent back down to San Diego, and then Milano got the cold shoulder this week after having a good game and didn't get back in. And now Volkov's likely off to the KHL, you would have to assume, or to another NHL team. We'll see how that goes. But I would assume
if they couldn't
find a trade partner and they're mutually terminating his contract, that usually means a guy probably has offers overseas and cannot have an NHL contract to go do that. So we'll see. Well, you know, I was hoping he would do well in Anaheim. I don't chalk this up to what a lot of people are saying is poor asset management again. It's not like Volkov was amazing by any means and would ever be more than a, you know, decent bottom six forward for the Ducks, which we have a ton of. So I'm not upset about this by any means, but it does suck to see him go because I would have liked to still see him play over Grant or Deloria, or at least get a couple games. But at the end of the day, it's not a huge, huge loss for the Ducks.
Yeah, so the thing I would say is I would imagine what they do, just based on the way the week has played out, I think at this point the best thing that they can do is, you know, get Grooch like two more games. Like, is he still on like the 10-game thing? Is that still like, is he still on a 10 NHL game? Because I know he's been like in the AHL, so I don't know how that works, but like, if that's a thing, I would get him to 8 and I would send him down. If it's not a thing, then I would still consider, you know, getting to a point in the next 3 or 4 games where you let him run out there and you just let him go for it some more, but then you send him back down and you go, all right, man, like, you're not ready, but we appreciate it. And we are going to bring up Milano. We're going to, you know, make sure Steele is getting into the lineup more regularly right now, you know, especially without Volkov. Like, they have somebody to be there. And, you know, hopefully down the line, you do see them trade somebody. Maybe it's Raquel. Maybe it's Grant. Maybe it's, you know, they get that imaginary first for Delorier. Like, you know, if they move a forward, then I do think you can look at Gru and expect him to be probably the first one up. But at this point, unless they think he's closer to being NHL ready than he looks to me, and obviously they know better, I think it's been a very beneficial thing for him, and you send him back down and you just let him go for it down there and get some more experience at the AHL level.
Yeah, I think that's what we see at some point. Maybe even this week, like you said, is Gru back down to San Diego. And not necessarily indicative of his play, but just to, again, maybe it's to give him a break and build his confidence back up. And when he does come back up, put him in maybe a bit of a better position than playing with Delorie and Grant. So we'll have to see. I would love to see him stay up. I think he plays a role that, you know, no matter, you know, where in the lineup 5-on-5 he's playing with the Ducks, I still think he can contribute and be a positive asset for this team on the penalty kill. You know, that's, at the end of the day, that's his bread and butter. But yeah, I it's so hard for me to criticize him just because of who he has to play with. Like,
you love
that
him?
Yeah, for sure. But because, like, you know, we were playing Zegras with Grant and Delorie and then sat here and criticized him for not putting up points or not playing well. It's absolutely tough, right? Yeah, and we probably would be talking about that.
We've seen Nick Delorie score goals, okay? If Zegras is this elite setup, no, I'm sorry. But like, more than anything, I think, like, think about how much grew, especially if that 10-game thing doesn't matter as Raquel's goatee. Thank you very much. Told us in the chat. If that doesn't matter, what the fuck, man? Play Gru with Henrique. If anybody can use a solid, competent two-way center or even winger who has defensive experience or center experience, who obviously you can put in to win a face-off, like, fucking A, what are we doing? Like, if that fourth line is Henrique, Delorie, and Gru, I feel very differently about it. Like, I just think, you know, like, again, like, one of my notes was like, we have to not overreact to the fourth line, and or we have to let it go. Like, those two guys are going to be there until time immemorial, and we just have to all live with it. But that being said, like, I as far as trying to put out the best 12 guys, trying to put the guys in a position to succeed, I do understand with why someone like Gru might be really beneficial for him to play with a guy like Henrique. Like, that seems like a very natural pairing to me, because I think in a lot of ways, and given what we know about Gru's ability to, like, he has said, I think in an interview before this season with Eric Stevens, he talked about, like, feeling like he's better, he has more offense to his game than maybe people think about. And so, like, yeah, Henrique seems like maybe who you're kind of hoping he becomes. Like, you know, 15, maybe he's like a 10 to 15 goal guy, 25 points or 25 assists maybe if you're lucky. But just being able to be that depth, strong, responsible two-way center would be really huge. So why not play him with someone who has been that throughout his career?
Yeah, and you know, if Benoit Levigre became Adam Henrique in his peak of his potential, I'd be completely fine with that. I think, you know, having a, when we look at,
dude, if he became Casey Cizikas, I would die happy.
And
like, I'm not being funny, like, Casey Cizikas is probably the best six center in the league.
Well, when you think of what, you know, what the Ducks have, and Benoit Levigre was never going to become never projected, at least, to become a top six forward. You know, it may be in a extreme circumstance he could become that, because you can't say that never could happen, because anything could happen. But yeah, if he becomes Casey Cizikas, a really good shutdown defensive center who can slot into your, you know, third and fourth line, there's nothing wrong with that, because the Ducks don't really have anybody who projects as a future kind of penalty kill specialist shutdown center. Maybe Isaac Lindstrom, but I feel like he's almost gotten more away from that as he's developed. You know, he kind of came out of the draft as being lauded as this guy who's going to be a really good shutdown two-way center, and I still think he is that to some extent, but that is what Beaugru is supposed to be. He is supposed to be a defensive specialist guy that you can throw it on the penalty kill, and he's going to get it done. You know, that is what he's supposed to be. So there's nothing wrong with having that. And if that's what he becomes, and if he becomes a 30-point, you know, 20, 30-point guy, but he can just do that really well, that is a valuable piece for the Ducks, because I don't think they have anybody else like that.
Okay, so just to ignore the very obvious name, let's just say that this year they finish, you know, high in the draft or whatever, and they take a guy who can be he's a legitimate number two center, right? And that makes Zegras your first guy. If you go Zegras, whoever, maybe it's McTavish, and then Lundstrom, Gru, like, if those guys all turn into the guys we roughly think they have the potential to be, and that's your four, like, Isaac Lundstrom and Bo Gru, again, at what we think they're on pace to be or can be as your bottom two centers is really strong. That is the kind of center depth that wins championships down the line, yeah. Right? Like, that's where you get your Yanni Gourde. The third line is actually the second line, but we also have Braden Point and Anthony Cirelli, yeah, already. So, like, it's just, like, a whole thing. And so I think that's the thing for me is, like, I would love, because, like, those would be the two guys, right, that you would expect to be the guys killing penalties. Like, I do think Lundstrom is that. Like, I do think some of the offense has been really nice to see, but I don't want to think that he's going to all of a sudden be a 60-point player. So, I mean, Kel, I'm not going to stop him if he wants to be that guy. But I do think there is a lot of value in him to just being a really high-end third-line center.
Yeah, and I think they, if you know, I hate comparisons because it's very right. hard to compare a player completely to another. But if you're looking at maybe stylistic comparisons. If you say, you know, Lindstrom can become that Yanni Gord, Adam Henrique for you, a guy who can put up 30 to 40 points, be very responsible in his own end, but also, you know, have that those flashes of brilliance offensively, which I think Lindstrom could be. It's a very good utility to have as your third line center. You know, if we say mm-hmm. Bogru can become a Casey Zizekas type player, as an example, that's a very nice player to have as your fourth line. Go ask Islanders fans how much they love having Casey Zizekas and Kyle Clutterbuck on their fourth line, right? And they still get it mm-hmm. done offensively every now and then and aren't an anchor for the team defensively. Like, they are an asset for right. the team. And then, you know, even if the Ducks don't get Shane Wright, like, let's just say it's Zegras as your number one center and McTavish is your number two. You've got some variety there in terms of what they can bring to the game. And mm-hmm. you've got the flair and the creativity with Trevor Zegras and kind of the muscle and the shooting ability and the physicality of McTavish. You've got this, like, really versatile four guys down the middle that they already have in the organization. Like, we're not even talking about having to go out and get a guy mm-hmm. or,
yeah.
you know, God forbid an Eichel trade happens or anything like that. Like, we're talking about the four guys that they have already in the organization, what this team could look like regardless of the draft or trades in the next couple of years. And I don't see any of those four guys getting moved out at any point unless McTavish was included in an Eichel trade. And even if he was, then you've got Zegras, Eichel, Lindstrom, Greer, right?
So right.
It's not like it changes too much after that. So, yeah, there are some positives to draw. And you start to see, again, like, where these pieces fit, where these guys are going to fit in the future and how, you know, all these pieces fit together and, you know, where Perreault eventually slides in and what Terry can do in the future and come to wide. You start to get a little optimistic about what the team could eventually look like in Pustyov. You know, somebody again just mentioned here, Zegras with Pustyov could be something. It could be, for sure. Pustyov has had a great start to life in Guelph. I think he's got 5 goals, 5 assists, 10 points in 7 games. Yeah, he's been great for them.
He had a Gordie Howe hat trick the other day, baby.
Goal assist in a fight, which I don't think I've ever seen him fight, but I love it. Love to see it. I can't complain about much about that. But yeah, the pieces are starting to come in place, and you can see how this roster is going to shape out. And, you know, if you think you add a Shane Wright to that, right? Like, or you add a Brad Lambert to that and what that could do. And
not a replacement. If we add a Rutger McGord. Yeah,
that one's a tough one. Or Chaz Lucas's brother. I forget what his name is. Is it Chad? No, it's not Chad. I don't remember his name, but another guy like that. You add, like, a top end, because that's all the Ducks need at this point, is another high end prospect to push it over the line.
That's all they need. Just another.
But they'll have the chance at that. Heart quality. It's okay.
But no, but you're right. But that's the thing, right? We talked about this last week, is the thing that feels different right now than any points in the past is it feels like there are multiple guys that could potentially fill the type of top six, top nine roles that, you know, a team that wants to contend needs. Yeah. Right? We can sit here and go, well, we've got Terry, and we've got Pustyov, and we've got Perreault, and we've got Tracy. And, you know what I mean? Like, we can sit here and be like, okay, like, some of these guys aren't going to work out, but some of them might. And if those guys hit, then we're in a really good spot moving forward. And so I do think that's kind of what feels different. And to what you said, like, it does change kind of how we interact with this team and what we're kind of looking for in this team this season. You know, yeah, maybe they all look good enough that an Eichel trade makes sense. And, you know, you protect the pick this year and, you know, hopefully you add something good, someone crazy good, and everything works out perfect. Or worse not, you add Jack Eichel, who's a Hart Trophy, you keep Zegras, and everybody just moves up a little bit. And you're like, all right, let's go. Like, I don't think you're in a bad spot. So there is a lot of reasons to be optimistic. None of them are going to happen this year, but there are, like, no, like, the good thing here, but there are a lot of reasons to think good things are coming down the line.
Yeah, and I'll mention, we talked about Eichel very briefly here, and again, I'll very, very briefly mention an update that came out. It's from the fourth period. David Pagnotta jumped on, I think it was a radio station in Buffalo, and had dropped a tidbit that the three most interested teams still in Eichel are the Ducks, Flames, and Golden Knights. You know, put as much stock in that as you will. That's as much of an update I'll give on the situation, because we've been talking about Jack Eichel since pretty much, spring, when the news first came out.
What happened with him? Why is he available?
I never want to hear any more Jack Eichel news until he's traded. Because every week it seems like we're 1 to 2 weeks away from a trade because Jack Eichel's camp has told them that if he's not moved, blah, 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 blah. And now it's like, they're going to file a grievance if he's not traded in 1 to 2 weeks or whatever. And we'll see.
It feels like we're chasing a dollar bill on a string, dude. It does. Like, it's just like, oh, it's so close.
So I've decided not to talk about it anymore until something happens. And once he gets traded somewhere, then we'll talk about it. But
it's important to take a stand.
We got to wrap up the show here with our weekly picks. We'll get Jason's and Pat's, because obviously they're not here.
We'll throw them out.
We'll get them before tomorrow's game, and we'll throw them in the document. We'll post them on social media so they're in here. Jason and I are 1-0 after getting it correct in the first week. Pat had win, loss, loss, win, which was ruined by the Wild. And Steven had 4 losses, which was ruined by the Flames. So that... is a nice early W for me and Jason. But we move on to another week, another 4 games. The Ducks play Winnipeg on Tuesday at home, Buffalo on Thursday at home, a quick road trip back-to-back on Friday to Vegas, and then finish off with Montreal, the winless Montreal Canadiens. Maybe not at that point, but right now they are, on Sunday at home. So what do you have the Ducks finishing this week? 3 home games, 1 back-to-back against some interesting teams.
I will say 2-2-0, loss, win, loss, win.
Win against Buffalo, win against Montreal?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I can see that. Buffalo, by the way, just beat the Tampa Bay Lightning 5-1 to stay undefeated tonight. I don't know what to take from that. The Buffalo Sabres are definitely not real, but it is becoming...
Well, they are technically real in that they do exist, yes, and currently
they're
occupy space and time with us. But yes,
their level of skill at hockey is not maybe real. But that will be an interesting one. The Sabres are just weird. I don't know how they're winning games. I look at their roster and I feel like, you know, half of it could be guys playing in the AHL. But somehow them stripping – maybe Jack Eichel was a problem. Who knows? Because they strip him as captain,
so
take him out of the roster.
And... spending 6 months talking about getting him. It turns out he was the problem all along.
Yeah, maybe we dodged
the call is coming from inside the house.
I will say the Ducks finish 2-2 as well. Different teams they win. I think they win against the first two. I think they win Winnipeg on Tuesday. It's been some close games. Winnipeg's obviously a very good team, but I think the Ducks win that one at home. I think they beat Buffalo on Thursday. I think they lose to Vegas on the back-to-back. That's a really tough game to play on a back-to-back and travel into Vegas and win. And I think they lose against Montreal. I don't like. It should be the most winnable game of the week, but I can't.
Jesus.
Montreal's shooting at 2% as a team. Like there is absolutely,
is that not sustainable?
There's absolutely no way that continues. And guys like Nick Suzuki and Tyler Toffoli and Josh Anderson, and they're like, the team's not amazing, but there's no way they're gonna shoot like that for the rest of the year. Whether that breakout game comes against Anaheim or before, so but funny. the floodgates are gonna open at some point for them.
If a year after they rode Tyler Toffoli turning into Brett Hull. To the cup final, the whole fucking team shoots like -3%. I would die so happy.
If they shot 2% for the entire season, that would be amazing.
That would be the greatest statistical anomaly ever. Like, that would literally, like, that would just be such an absurd thing that you would just have to say, this doesn't mean anything and weird, and just completely ignoring it. But, oh my god, what a ride that would be. That would be
amazing.
Incredible.
I'm all here for the Montreal Canadiens not doing well this year. I love it.
The only thing about that is it probably ends with them getting Shane Wright.
Yeah, which would be over us too, which would be disappointing. Yeah. A couple of predictions in the chat. Brett says that the Ducks will finish 3-0-1 with an OT loss to the Jets.
He said they're going to go 0-4. I see it right here.
Oh, he's got two predictions. Chiefs. They said 0-4. And Raquel's goatee said 3-1 with a loss against Vegas. That loss against Vegas almost just seems like a foregone conclusion. I just hope it's a competitive game. That's all I'm hoping for at this point.
Dude, it's a Friday back-to-back. They're going to get in from Anaheim to Vegas Thursday night. They're going to play Vegas Friday evening at 5. They are going to lose that game by 7.
Oh, man.
And they are all going to have pictures outside of them, like, you know, drinking some shitty Corona, like, at a bar. Like, it's going to be the best.
I can't get really upset about your picks this week because we both said we're 2-2. I mean, we had different games we're going to win, but ultimately, if the Ducks go 2-2, we both get a W this week. So I'm in your corner for the Ducks. Yeah. The Ducks winning this week. But we'll wrap it there because we're pushing an hour 10. If you want to get some extra content, I said this last week. We still haven't recorded a Patreon show, but we are in the process of scheduling. As you can see, there's only two of us today, so we're in the process of figuring out our scheduling and getting things set up for a Patreon show, but we are planning not only a Pucks and Brews, but some other bonus shows upcoming as well. So we'll have a bunch of things getting released on there. So check us out on Patreon. It's patreon.com/forevermighty. We're thinking of doing potentially some extra post games on the Patreon, only in discussion right now, but we're going to see how that works and the logistics on that. But we might be doing some bonus post game shows on there as well. So stick around for that. But thanks for everybody who came out today. It was a surprising amount of people who came out on a Monday night to listen to us ramble about the last week of Ducks hockey. So love everybody that came out live. Thanks for everybody listening after the fact too. But if you do ever want to come out to the streams, we are going to try and be live Saturday and Sundays. But obviously today was a Monday. But the streams are always a lot of fun. So if you haven't come out and checked out the show live, we like to interact with everybody in the chat. So give it a chance. You know, check us out on Twitch. Put on the notifications, come out, check the show out live, and join us for some of the action. So I think, aiming for Saturday, Sunday next week so that Jay can get on, and so hopefully Pat can get on too?
Yeah, probably Sunday next week, which makes the most sense. We'll see. I don't know. I can never remember which one's actually Halloween. It doesn't make sense.
It looks like I'm getting yelled at by a cat to shut this down. So you want to sign this off for us here, Steven. So.
Like Eddie said, we appreciate everybody who came out tonight. We appreciate everybody who listens after the fact, and we promise we will eventually let Pat and Jason also talk. Bye, everybody. Good night.